Today I called a friend in Rochester.
Why, good morning.
Well, you say the faster I go, the behinder I get.
Yes, howdy. Well, come in.
Haven't seen God in so long.
Huh? No?
Yeah. Well, I started out, and I thought it was going to be early, because my boy had to get off at 9:30, and then I ran into my uncle, and I kept telling him I had to get away.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, you're just in too big a rush, mm-hmm. Flossie.
Yeah.
Settle down. Don't
respect
him. Yeah, I've been home there 2 weeks. I haven't seen Janice yet. Isn't that something?
Oh.
2 weeks?
No, I've been here a week yesterday.
Yes, that's more like it. That's been nice.
Yeah, I've been here a week yesterday and haven't seen Janice yet.
Well, she's a sister ball, wasn't
she? Well, what have you people been doing? Well, we looked around. We walked around and looked at the paint in the trunk of the car.
Oh, that's beautiful paint there, Florence. That ought to be nice.
It's got a lot of good ingredients.
8 gallons of it. Yeah. That ought to make that fence look better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that mildew side, and it should help too, because that seems to be a problem down here.
Yeah.
Fine.
Something to keep the dirt dabbers off. They don't bother out there, though, do they?
What?
The dirt dabbers.
No, not there. No, they like the house.
They like the porch.
They like the house.
What you used to do to get the dirt daubers down?
Well, I tell you what. One time, Evan Smith painted this house.
Oh, really?
And he said there's something we can put in this. It's right expensive, but there's something put in this that is repulsive to dirt daubers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, let's try it. So it was so much a quart, and that was about as much a quart as the paint was a gallon. But I got it for him, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't heard anything more about it since. I haven't been able to get Evan Smith back here since. It's when he was doing that job that he called my attention to this water pipe out here where that used to be an old pitcher pump.
Mm-hmm.
He said, does this work? I said, "Was this work?" I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know where the old pitcher pump is. Well, he said, you know, you just ought to have it. You just ought to have one. It put atmosphere on this place.
Mm-hmm.
If you get one, I'll put it on for you and I'll paint it red.
Yeah.
And I think he thought he was fair to see. And I asked Frank Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Frank does plumbing. I asked Frank, I said, do you know where I could find an old pitcher pump? He says, I have one.
Yeah.
He said, I bought it when I thought I was going to do septic tank cleaning. But says I never did do it. I have lost interest in that kind of work now. He says, down in my old storage place, I'll give it to you. Well, I said, I'll buy it from you. No, he said, I'll give it to you. I'll come and put it on someday. And while I was giving my music lesson one day, Frank came and he put it on.
It's on now?
It's on now. And I phoned Evan Smith. I said, you lost.
Fire
you thought I
red
wouldn't find
too.
A picture
fire, fire engine red.
But I said, I have one now. But he said, I'll be as good as my word. And he came over and he painted it. But you know, if I had been here, if I had been out here when Evans was putting that on, I think we might have been able to work the picture pump. We had blocked up the old pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And the edge of it had gotten ragged and rough,
mm-hmm.
and so Evan just sawed off that. I mean, Frank Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Williams just sawed off that top and left the plug down in there and then screwed this thing on. And so it was too much trouble. I just couldn't say, take that thing off now, let's unplug it and see if it will draw water.
Mr. Eastman can do things like that.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know whether it would or not. We used to have, where this porch is now, there used to be a great big old tank. Wooden tank.
Wooden tank.
Wooden tank. And from all these gutters, these valleys and things, water went into that tank.
Oh, yes.
And that might have been the water we drew out of that pitcher pump. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be.
Well, did you use that to drink from, the water that went into the tank? Did you drink that water?
I guess we did.
Was this before city water?
Well, no, then, I don't know. I don't know where we got drinking water. I don't know where we got that drinking water. But I know, I can remember when our father had that other well dug. It's over 100 feet deep.
Oh, yeah.
And we brought in water from there for drinking purposes.
That answers your question.
And then we used to have that old wood house that's down there now, where it is. Used to be up here nearer the house. And it had a shed on one side of it, and in there, after we tore down this big wooden tank, Father had a big metal tank there, and a gasoline motor, and we pumped the water. And see, the house is built with the water brick.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he, just before he died, we began to have a good little trouble with the gasoline motor. But that time we had city water. And so when he died, well, we thought that we would just not try to repair that or get a new engine motor. We just hook on the water, the town water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did.
That's much simpler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because another lady over here, Mrs. Ida Smith, she changed an electric pump. And she had just about as much trouble with her electric pump as we were having with our gasoline pump.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you, I had a fun experience that selling that stuff. I want to sell the motor and the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody from up around Lake Butler bought it.
Way up there.
Way up there, and they came down. And got it one time while I was, but they came down and made the deal. And then they came back to get it one day when I wasn't here. And they took not only the pump and the tank, but they took all the brick I had out there, of which it was mine. That was not included in the deal. Took all the brick. So I don't know whether I called them up or whether I wrote them a letter. But anyway, I got word to them. That wasn't in the deal, that if they wanted the brick, they had to pay for them, but I'd rather bring them back because I could use them. And they sent a telegram over Western Union. And Clarence Bateman was the depot agent at that time, and he took that message. And he never showed me that message. He came up here and told me about it. He said, "Who in the world is this? And what kind of business is it?" He said, "I never had such a telegram in my life. It's so positively insulting, I wouldn't give it to anybody."
Oh!
But he said, "That man is in bad humor about those bricks." Now, why was there a telegram? I never know, but Miss Bateman wouldn't give it to me. He said, "It's so ugly."
Well, I wish Mr. Bateman would censor some of my mail.
Yeah.
That's what you call personalized service.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. But he said, "You write that man about, or call him up or something, and in reply to this telegram, because he's in foul humor about those bricks."
Mm-hmm. So you didn't get him back?
I didn't get him back.
Did he pay you?
Mm-mm.
That was the end of it.
Mm-hmm. That was the end of those bricks.
About that. Well,
you know, those old cistern lines were nice. We used to have a cistern in my time.
Yeah, this is called a cistern line. That's called a cistern. That down there is a pump. Oh, that's a well.
That's a well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Our cisterns were had wells. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. We had a pump when I was growing up.
Yeah, you
were out by the house. Uh-huh. We used to have a big old tub you'd put under it and take a bath in. Just pump the water in.
Sure.
That well is over 100 feet deep.
Yeah.
And there used to be a colored man lived out here in our cabin. And he'd bring in 2 buckets of water every morning. One we kept right there for drinking, and one we kept in there for cooking. Because we found out when we first began to have city water, everybody found out when they cooked rice or grits or potatoes or cooked anything in that water, that it discolored it. The rice would be kind of yellow, rusted looking, rusted looking rice. And so we kept water in there about to cooking vegetables and things, and water I had to drink. Then in the afternoon, but Charles emptied these buckets and bring them again.
Mm-hmm.
Twice a day, he brought in two buckets of water for drinking and for cooking.
You said Charlie lived down mm-hmm. there by himself?
No, Charlie had a wife.
Mm-hmm.
Her name was Emma. And he raked in our yard and ran errands and things like that for us. That's all Charlie was good for. And Emma was good for less, we thought. She was this kind of woman. We'd tell her to sweep the porch, and that's what she'd do. She wouldn't sweep the steps unless she said sweep the porch and the steps. She just sweep the porch.
Yeah.
And so we didn't use her much, but Mrs. Monica Gist's mother-in-law, Miss Jo Gist, used it up down the hill. And we were glad for it, but somebody could use it because we didn't care much about her, and she had good disposition, but she just wasn't much good at house help.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one morning, she went up there to work, and she just never did come back. Late in the afternoon, she didn't come. And Charles went there, and they said, we hadn't seen Emma today. We thought maybe she was sick. We found out she went off with another man.
Oh.
Somebody said that they had seen her over in Deland. And you know, Charlie this morning, Charlie is all broken up.
Yeah.
And they seemed to be a very happy, congenial couple.
Mm-hmm.
But she walked off and left him. So then he began to get feeble, and not to his guy, I did as much for Charlie or more than he was able to for me. And then he began to get welfare checks. So then I said to him, well, Charlie, I said, if you can't do the yard, because they were paying no rent for the house, if you can't break the yard, not able to break it anymore, I think you ought to pay somehow. And so it was too funny of a thing. He'd get a new man to come in here and make a rake and mow that yard. And he'd stand there, you think he was a governor as he directed him and fussed at him about how he did it. We had to let Charlie do it as he pleased when he did it. But when he was saying that other colored man, it was just too funny to watch him as he bossed the job.
I never heard of anything like that.
Well, now that happened. That happened. And before that happened, though, I went to the welfare people. And I said, this man is getting welfare money out there, and he's living in my house for nothing, and he's not doing the same for me. And I was in bad humor about it. And you know what they told me? They said, that's not our business. Our business is to give him the money. How he spends it's not our business. Well, they should tell him what was right and wrong about how he was doing his money.
That's cursing, isn't it?
Uh-huh. But that's what they said. They were just... But that kind of air, that is none of our business.
Mm-hmm.
It's our business to give him the money.
Mm-hmm.
How he spends it is not our business.
How long was Charlie with you?
Oh, for a long, long time. And then I had to cook for him and take his meals out there. Oh, he was very bad. I wondered how long I was going to be able to keep that up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where he could go, what would happen to him. And I began to investigate where... people would care for elderly colored men. And
whose wife had run off.
And whose wife had run off and left him. And I want you to know, it was first day of December. I've forgotten the year. It was first day of December. I remember that because that was the opening of the deer season in the forest. And I had some guns and shells stored in my garage, in my barn down here, for my cousin Harry Culpepper, who was a great hunter. And so the night of December the 1st, I had gone to bed at usual time. They had had Boy Scout meeting over here at the park, and they were all through and they'd gone home. And I hadn't been in bed too long, but I happened to change my position in bed and open my eyes and looking out my windows over there. I could see that my yard was awfully light. And I thought, yeah, that's Harry Culpepper's. lights from Harris Culpepper's car. He's coming in here. He wants the key to the barn to get those his hunting things out of there. So I jumped to come up here, opened the door to get the key, and it wasn't that tall. This house was on fire. It was just about ready to fall in.
Wow.
And I went running out there screaming as hard as I could, Charlie, Charlie, Charlie. And I couldn't get near the door. It was that hot. Then I came back to the telephone and began phoning. And in just no time at all, I had everybody here. And we have a very good volunteer fire department. And they put that fire out. And they sent for the sheriff and a coroner. And they sent for Dr. Strange. When they got the fire all out, it was the eeriest experience I've had in my life. All this smoke and fire and water dripping everywhere and people standing all over the place, all around about. And they broke inside and they found the remains, some from remains. And Dr. Strange made an examination and declared that he died of natural causes. They wondered if there'd been foul play because the man had money.
Yeah.
The man had money in there, and all the colored people around here knew it. But they had to break the door down to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And they say the fire originated in the corner of the house where his bed was. And Dr. Strange said he thought he either died of a heart attack, and or he was smoking in bed, and there was a gas kerosene lamp by the bed. So he said how it happened, of course, was one person's guess, all as good as another. But he said, I don't believe he said that to make me feel better or not, but he said, I don't believe Charlie knew about the fire. I think somehow he overturned the lamp or was smoking in the bed, and the bed covers got on fire. He said, I don't believe Charlie knew about the fire.
Was Charlie good company?
Yeah, Charlie was good company. We used to love to hear him talk his kind of talk, you know. Then he had a son from previous marriage, I guess, who used to come here occasionally and stay. And he had asthma. I never heard anything like it in my life, that breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear all here. Well, we would get so distressed, and we'd send for the doctor ourselves to come and see what in the world he could do about it. That I know more about asthma through Charlie's son being out there at times.
What did they treat asthma with?
Huh?
What did they treat asthma with then?
I don't know. He'd come and give me some medicine.
Help him?
It happened for time. Then I don't know where he came from, but he'd go somewhere else. But every now and then he'd come back and stay a while with Charlie. I guess he wasn't able to work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where he'd go.
Was Charlie a Florida darkie, or mm-hmm. South Carolina? Mm-hmm.
And he was Florida.
Florida.
And in the ruins out there, we found some money.
Yeah.
I guess it's about $300. Because he never spent any of it, except for a little bit he paid for that man, the more they are. Because I was probably just about feeding him, and he got his medicine through the welfare, so he didn't have to spend any of it. So there was about $300. But the bills were all badly burnt and charred.
Oh.
But the lawyer told me that I could send that to Washington, and they'd probably redeem it. And so I did. And we got back enough to pay for the burial expenses.
Hmm.
And the house was not insured. Since that time, my policy includes that old barn down there, but at the time, my policy didn't include that house.
Oh.
So the house was complete loss to me. But you know, the lumber that was left, the flooring, so the top part of it was all gone. But it was nice that built the same kind of lumber this house built, same kind of house was. And it had two glass windows, which is unusual for a Negro cabin.
Mm-hmm.
You usually just have solid windows, you know, that open. But this had glass windows. and a good door, and they had a fireplace, mm-hmm. and the sills and the flooring was always perfectly good, mm-hmm. and the brick pillars were good, of course, and there's quite a lot of a big chimney, and those bricks were good. And you know what I did for that? I gave all that to the Max. The Max are very
Tommy Mac.
No, not Tommy Mac.
No, I know.
No, you know Melvin Mac.
The ones Mac you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, they're very.
That of course things weren't too good in the early 30s. Well, 30s. And that mm-hmm. they were. You still had a little depression going around here, and I remember them in grammar school.
Yeah, they were needy. They were needy
very
family.
Needy.
They were members of the Baptist Church. They, you know, they, I think they go to what's left of them.
And you remember?
Oh, yes. And they were, you know, during that time, there were some who were still struggling pretty hard in school. You know, they
were, and they
were
trying
to
build.
Clothes and things, and they didn't.
They were trying to build. And so I said to them, if you're coming with a truck, that bald chimney looks so depressing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had visions of when Charlie was gone that I'd do something about that house. I was going to move it nearer my house.
No.
Had his family have a... your phone, I guess.
Huh?
Your phone.
Oh, yeah. I don't have anybody like that to grow up with, Dr. Waldo.
What, yeah. That lived there?
Yeah, they're all white
people. We did, too.
You didn't know any of these of Charlie's when you were growing
up. Oh, yes, I did. Oh, yes. We had a family that, Merricks was their name. And old Charity Merricks helped raise my grandmother. That was just right out of slavery. In fact, Charity wet nursed my mother's brothers and sisters.
Oh.
Mhm. And she had a daughter named Ernestine, a boy named Richard, and Ernestine and raised me. And she wasn't a real young woman then. And I can remember, you know, whenever I needed a little solace, I could always go to Ernestine's big lap, and she'd always take care of me. Yeah. She used to take me home with her at night sometimes, and she had a very clean house. Used to take me to church with her. Used to watch the, especially when the children gave programs at night. You know, used to have special children Christmas Eve and times like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were with the family off and on for 60 years or so. And Richard Merricks is still working for Robert, my uncle, now. So that's been even longer. I guess it's even longer than that. So since my actual great-grandparents, Merricks. And Ernestine has been a patient of Carl's. So she's pretty old now. She's about 79. And she continues to take things into the office for me. We've taken care of her for nothing, mostly because she took care of me so well when I was little.
Mm-hmm.
And she never forgets to bring nuts and during the season, or pound cake or something of this sort.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Always even tempered. I remember they used to give you castor oil on those days. You know, I hated it. And the only one that could get me to take castor oil was Ernestine. Mm-hmm. She was just sort of like a big fortress, though. You know, she was always easygoing. Always. Just take you up in her lap, you know, and that was just like comfort itself. So, I know I grew up very close to her, as much more so than I did my mother in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And then we had, since there were so many in the family, because there were 6 children, plus my mother and I, or 8, and grandparents, too, run it up pretty fast, 10 or 12 in the house.
Yeah.
And we used to have a wash house out back down there, and they didn't have electric irons then and washing machines, so they used to wash on the big tin tubs,
mm-hmm.
and had coal pots with the old irons that you'd heat on them. And so we had a crew that worked down there for years and years in the wash house.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daddy sort of adopted a boy by the name of Snap. Real tall, skinny, darky, didn't have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived with us, so not in the house, but in a house, sort of like Charlie did, from the time he was about 12 or 14 until he was a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
So there actually were quite a few around.
Yeah. What's your name?
The tall darky's name was Snap.
No, the one that brings you.
Oh, Ernestine.
Ernestine, yeah.
Ernestine Merrick. Mm-hmm. And a brother, Richardson. Richard always seemed a little different. It's a darky, you know, how many of them didn't have much pride in themselves. He always dressed real neat, and he always seemed real bright, a little bit different.
Well, with a family that big, it'd be nice to have somebody like Ernestine to grow up with, that big lap of hers.
Yes, I was actually a grandchild, but in a way it was like I had six older brothers and sisters,
because
mm-hmm. they weren't that much. Of course, one of them happened to be my mama, but the youngest child, my mother's sister, is only 4 years older than I am.
Yeah.
And her other sister is only 6.5 years older. So they are really about my age, and sometimes I kind of didn't get lost in the shuffle around there, but... I needed somebody I could find in a hurry with all
yes.
those people around.
Yeah.
And so if it wasn't Ernestine, it was a police dog. I didn't have anyone to play with my age because we lived out from town. And they did hire a little boy by the name of Nathaniel to go along with me all the time.
Oh, really?
To keep me out of trouble because I never stayed home. I wandered in the woods all the time. The time I was about 3.5 to 4.
Yeah.
And I got more paddlings for that than anything because I'd leave in the morning. I wouldn't come back till dark.
Can you imagine?
And they couldn't find me.
Right.
And it just didn't dawn on me that there was any danger anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'd be out building a tree in Palmetto somewhere.
All by yourself?
All by myself.
My friend, that's not...
So they hired Nathaniel to track me down. But then he sometime would get me into trouble. You know, he'd want to build a slingshot or something. He'd say, "Miss Florence, all we need is a little piece of leather." And I thought leather's leather.
Yeah.
I remember my mother had a beautiful pair of lavender leather bedroom slippers. And I thought, wouldn't that make a handsome slingshot?
Mm-hmm.
So I went in and got her bedroom shoes, and Nathaniel didn't have any more sense than I did.
Yeah.
We cut them up.
Yeah.
We really had a dandy slingshot.
Yeah.
That didn't set too
yeah.
well with my mother.
Slingshot and Technicolor.
Yeah, slingshot and Technicolor. So sometimes he got me in more trouble than he kept me out of. But just
you know, every now and then I look at some of these old Southern books, So Red the Rose, that Stark Young thing. And I forget the names now. But the children always had a little colored boy, a colored girl to grow up with.
Mm-hmm.
That was just common practice.
Well, Snap,
to play with.
Mm-hmm. Well, Snap sort of grew up with my mother's brothers and sisters because he was about their age. Except that he was not old enough to be sort of the old Uncle Charlie type you might go to whittle something.
Mm-hmm.
But he was just around and would tussle with the other boys and do things with them.
Mm-hmm.
But Nathaniel was just to watch me. He was only about 2 years older, three maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I could outsmart him most of the time and try to get him to do what I wanted to anyway, so it's sort of like a lost cause
mm-hmm.
as far as keeping me out of trouble was concerned.
I can't match that.
No.
No. We used to have a great big warehouse over there. Granddaddy was a pecan dealer for that section of Florida, really. All the people would pick the pecans and bring them in there and be weighed. A lot of little darky boys, I remember, would pick them up for 2 cents a pound.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have a big scale out there and weigh them in and put them into the bins. And so there were a lot of darkies coming and going all the time. And we had one that worked for us by the name of Tobe. And he started working for Granddaddy when he was about 16. And he worked for my uncle after my granddaddy died. And he was still working for my uncle, about 4 years ago. My uncle died, and I don't know what uncle Toby is now. Don?
Yeah, Don. I couldn't think of his name.
Don.
Now, was that the family pecan business that Don carried on?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And but Toby was just as faithful as he could be.
Mm-hmm.
And James, of course, has worked for Beattie ever since I was 12. He's been with him that long.
Well, where did James come from? Oh.
James Sawyer.
Yeah.
So there's always been somebody around.
But that was down here.
Mm-hmm, that was down here.
That's after.
After I left Waldo.
Yeah.
But Tob was always the one who knew how to do things.
You mean James has been working for Mr. Rogers ever since you were 12?
I was 12 years old.
Right.
Yes. They used to call him Mr. Beattie's secretary.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
You know, he was always running Beattie's errands with the truck and things.
Mm-hmm. And when I first came down here, he ran mine, too.
He runs everybody's on my daddy's gas. Yeah. I think that's my daddy's philanthropy.
Yeah.
Carting everybody everywhere vicariously.
Yes, I said, now, he brought something, he hauled something over there for me. And I said, now, James, how much do I owe you? he stuttered, not stuttered, talked fast. But you see, I found out later what he meant. He'd do something for me, and then I can do something for him. It's much better, you see, than just paying him $1 or $2.
He's one of the few that doesn't always ask for money or expect it, really.
Mm-hmm.
He always tells me, well, you can do me a favor sometime. Sometimes he'll say that.
Yeah.
You can do me a favor sometime. And I do. When his eyes burn, he wants some that magic eye medicine, you know. Mm-hmm. Or when his back hurts, well, he always comes and tells me he needs some. So I help him out on the medicine. It's sort of nice to be able to work like that. He's always willing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you don't find him like that too much anymore.
Oh, let me ask you something before you're going to go one these days. I don't know that I know Miss Phillips. The name sounds familiar.
Well, she was Myrtle Granger. But and she had one brother, and he died in the teens.
Who? Miss Bateman's one. Myrtle Bateman's one. I know.
And Bateman.
Mertis, yeah.
Mertis Bateman.
Yeah, that's I just associating. I knew her in Ms. What you call it, Sunday school class.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. And she was a Baldwin. Her mother used to run the hotel down there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Uh-huh. That's where, and the Baldwins were running the hotel when that judge used to come down here. That was the heyday of the hotel.
Her mother, Ms. Mm-hmm. Bateman's mother,
mm-hmm.
Baldwin. What judge was that, Charles? Judge Miller?
The judge is, what judge?
Judge, what was his name?
It doesn't matter.
First time I told the New York judge, he's the one who said this is the beginning of the end.
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, yes, you do. Let me see, what was the man's name, though? Judge Mills.
Mills.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Mills.
Yeah.
He was on the New York bench.
I can't quite. What is. Now.
Mrs. Bateman's mother
was
running the hotel. She was a Mrs. Baldwin. She's running the hotel at the time when some Indian New York people used to come down to the hotel.
And Judge Mills was one of the New York people.
Yes, right. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't seem to remember a picture if you told me about him. What he kind of, what did he do?
Well, he was one who was on the bench over there having this famous law suit up in New York State.
Oh, yeah.
Some famous socialite had gotten scandalized some way.
Yeah.
And the judge was on the bench.
Well, what do you do down here?
And he was down here hunting. He come here every year to hunt and fish.
Uh-huh.
And while he was down here one time, that something came up in the court up there, and they phoned down here to McIntosh to talk to him about it, and it came out on the front page of the New York Times.
Uh-huh.
That they had talked to Judge Mills, who was at his fishing lodge. It wasn't so, it was the McIntosh Hotel, but we had his fishing lodge in McIntosh, Florida.
Yeah.
And we haven't gotten over that to this day. Our name, McIntosh, Florida,
yeah,
appeared on the front page of the New York Times.
Judge Mills was here.
Judge Mills was here.
Yeah.
Well, he used to come down and fish and hunt. And every year he'd come, at least once, he'd get lost on the lake. You know, the floating islands, he'd
yeah.
get in, and he'd go down there and stay all day, and he'd get ready to come back, and he couldn't find his way.
Yeah.
And when he didn't come in time for the evening meal, by then, no, Judge Mills was lost. So the news would get out all over town, everybody go in their way, what idea they had about where they could find it. Everybody get busy.
Yeah.
To go try and find Judge Mills.
Yeah.
And then when he didn't go fishing or hunting, well, he'd sit around the hotel, and that's the grandest place to sit down, that porch.
Yeah.
For the sun.
Uh-huh.
But the wind couldn't get to your back because the porch was narrow. He'd sit up against that in this big old chair and a big rug over his knees, you know, and cap pulled down. He'd sit there, and all the outsiders stand around, sitting around the ground would be every man in town, they could get there, hear Judge Mills talk.
Uh-huh.
And about that time, Florida Power Line came through here. Florida Power Company. And that's when he shook his head and said, uh-oh, that's the beginning of the end.
I can't
He thought it was going to be too civilized after that. He liked it the way it was.
I can't quite picture that, where people stand around there and listen to him talk. You mean he'd be out there on the porch?
Yeah, huh.
Talking.
Yeah, huh. And he's sitting there. They had rockers all out there, and he was sitting on those rockers,
yeah.
Those old-fashioned porch rockers, that all like I have out there.
Yeah.
And with the cap pulled down to shade his eyes, I can see him pretty well. And a rug, a lap robe over his, to protect him from the whatever wind it was.
Yeah.
For the weather.
Yeah.
But he liked the sun, and I think he always smoked a pipe.
And he'd talk about
legal stories. I don't know what to tell, because I never thought.
Oh, yes, those legal stories.
Yeah.
There's just a world of them.
Mm-hmm. And maybe hunting, maybe for all I knew, he used to go up into the northern woods hunting or fishing or something. Anyway, he had a lot of stories. He was good. He was a good storyteller.
Yeah.
And was quite a celebrity, and everybody appreciated him. And
now, your lawyers and your preachers and your doctors all had stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do your preachers tell stories?
A new one right now?
Any of them.
Well,
recently.
He's a great reader. Now he reviews books and he reports a lot of his reading.
Yeah.
He breaks it into his sermons.
But Judge Mills wasn't a great reader.
Well, I don't know that he was. Now he had a son who used to come down here too, and the son Isaiah was more of a student, more of a scholar, maybe, than Judge Mills, and the son used to send books back to some of the children, the young people around here. And Wilshire Walker was a kind of a protege of his. He sent a lot of things back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about that time that Wilshire broke his leg playing practicing football. He was going to Micanopy School. And I can't think what his first name was now. But anyway, the young Mills was very good to Wilshire at that time, sending him things that
mm-hmm.
that would help pass the time while he was laid up with that broken leg.
Mm-hmm. But your ministers don't tell stories anymore.
Not this man. He doesn't tell many stories in the
Any of ministers now don't tell stories anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When did they quit?
Well, I don't know. For the last several years, our ministers have all been PhD students. And they give us the works. They give us the literary works in the pulpit.
Which do you like, Louis?
Huh?
Which do you like?
Uh-huh.
Do you like those old stories? Or do you like?
Well, yeah, I like some illustrations.
But do you think it leaves the sermon a little barren when they don't give you a real life story?
I do. Now, I heard a woman say just the other day, I met her in the one supermarket in Kingsville. She lives in Boardman, and she comes to our church on occasion. She's now a very regular attender. And she said to me the other day, she said, that man's not gonna keep that church together. And she said, it's hard for me to listen to you. Well, I said, now, we're liking him. We're liking him very much. And I said, you keep on coming. And I think he was like, she was shaking her head. She was already trying to turn against him.
She didn't want to change and learn to like him. She knew what she liked, didn't she? I think so, too.
Well, I think she kind of liked John Andy. He talked fast. He talked sprightly, you know. And he would have a little wit about it. But Mr. Pendergrass is more serious, and it's a little hard to listen to, really. I mean, you have to listen like this. Uh-huh. Now, when he first came, he said, now I'm a big man, but I don't have a big voice.
Uh-huh.
And he wanted a loudspeaker, so we put it up there. But now, there was the other day, it isn't there anymore. I don't know whether it went to the bad, no one has fixed it, but it isn't there. And I guess maybe that woman sitting back there doesn't hear.
Maybe she doesn't hear.
That doesn't hear everything he says.
Yeah.
We used to have an older man about four preachers back. Let's see.
Haygood.
Dr. Haygood.
Is he the one that took photographs?
Yeah, he's the Vanderbilt fella.
He's a Vanderbilt fella.
Uh-huh.
Dressed kind of natty.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Where did I see him? Old church.
Our house. Uh-huh. He had brought his son with him.
Yeah.
Real nice boy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. How about Dr. Haygood?
He had been a chaplain in the Navy. So he a lot of his illustrations were from around the world and were Navy stories. He was real interesting. But now he and his wife are in Hawaii. Now I don't think they were the Peace Corps. I don't know whether with that.
Was he a good talker?
Yes, he was a very good talker.
In the pulpit. And at home too.
Mm-hmm. Now what is that service?
Now he's the last.
Service for America.
He's the last one who talked well outside. I was trying to connect him up, with Judge Mills. That's kind of hard to do.
Yeah. But you remember Richard Barber, don't you, in our pulpit?
Oh yes.
And his Sunday, his Wednesday night service, I thought they were just very outstanding.
Yeah.
And what he could do with a crayon and a blackboard and talk all the same time was just out of this world, wasn't it?
Yes, he had a touch.
Uh-huh. He really did.
Where'd he get it?
I don't know.
From his daddy.
Was his daddy a preacher?
I mean, it came down like, hey, you don't get it in school.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, I had all right. Norman Vincent Field. But let me tell you, he was on Channel 5.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry your television won't get Channel 5.
I get Channel 5.
You can.
Uh-huh. I get it frequently.
Well, do you
I heard him. I heard him recently, too.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh.
Edwin Newman?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Whole hour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sir, I didn't know anything about him. And I thought, I don't know what I thought. I thought he'd be one of those, just slick talkers, good talkers, but that's all. Why, he just like some old Baptist preacher that you brought up with.
Mm-hmm.
Methodist he is.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, he's not either. He's something else. But it's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
He just liked the preachers I brought up with.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in New York all his active life since 1930.
His message has always been very simple, though.
Yes.
If you read his, I have one of his.
Well, Billy Graham is too. I never heard Billy Graham say anything I haven't heard other people say.
Yeah.
It's just his personality.
Yeah.
They had a personality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Phil's always, you read some of his books. Have you read any of his books?
just red Adam plant. I never had that much keys.
Well, what I get from him is that you get a, his positive thinking is to get a, something that is positive, like a scripture, piece of scripture that's going to help you.
Yes.
And that you just try to keep this in mind all the time.
Yeah.
And not just read it and let it go.
Yeah.
It's run through all of this book.
You do that? You do that?
I don't know what I do now.
I think it'd be nice. I'll try it.
Yeah. He says, you know, like start maybe with it in the morning or seek something first that's going to be helpful and give you direction, and then you just stick with it, and you just don't let it go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that part, the power positive thing. I thought I don't have many copies of it.
Really?
I gave one to Buddy Huff.
I gave one to Buddy Huff one time. Yeah. Well, that's funny. You see, I've never taken it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never had any case into it.
Well, we have a little personal interest in Dr. Teal. This Myrtle Phillips over here, who's sick now, her husband, Russell Phillips, I don't know if you've ever heard this now, he was a railroad engineer. He ran on the Silver Media from Wildwood to Miami.
Oh.
And one time, coming up from Miami, Dr. Teal and his wife had been in Miami. And he was grateful to get the stories from the cross sections of the country. And so he went to the seaboard office before he left Miami and got special permission to ride the diesel. He said, I want permission to ride the diesel leaving Miami. And Russell Phillips was the engineer that day. And he was an unusual fellow. He could talk to the brakeman, he could talk to Dr. Peel, either one.
Mm-hmm.
And in his billfold, he carried a picture of this Methodist church here in McIntosh.
Mm-hmm.
So when Dr. Peel came into the cab, while they began to talk and to visit, and by the time they got to Wildwood, they were fast friends. And Dr. Peel has written stories about it. He sent one of his writers down to interview him for the Guidepost.
Mm-hmm.
And he has said in some of his writings, he said, I never was surprised in my life when I found a railroad engineer carried in his billfold a picture of his church.
Uh-huh.
And furthermore, he said when they got off at Wildwood and the change crew, those men had a prayer. He said, I never believed it. I don't believe it if I hadn't seen it. Because railroad men have a reputation of being rather rough, you know, and not always spiritual minded.
That ride first class.
Yeah.
He goes along with the people who live with life.
Yes.
And so maybe he does this wherever he goes. Maybe he takes little trips on purpose.
And Russell said, I want to invite you and Miss Peel to come to McIntosh. We'll declare Dr. Peel Day. And we'll have chicken, fried chicken, and knee deep. And he said he would.
Yeah.
But he never did.
If you brought it up, she'd be too weak to think about it really much, wouldn't she?
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what she needs.
Lois, don't you push yourself.
Hmm? Time-wise.
Don't push yourself time-wise. You don't have to be polite.
Well, you know, she's kind of been down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe something like that, to recapture some of the times that were lifting then, would help her now. Just wonder.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not good at that.
If they aren't too far down, you can. Just according to how depressed she is. If she isn't too depressed, it could help her. And if someone had time to go sit and get her started, maybe they're thinking about, well, it's in the past, but it's still not in a way. Bring her out of herself a little bit, because I think she's too preoccupied with a fatalistic future right now. Might be just the thing.
What's your notion?
Well, I'll, oh yes, let me see, someone has talked to me today. My phone didn't ring a good deal today because they'd phoned me news. I had to mail my news on Wednesday. And I have 2 or 3 more items I must add to it, too.
Oh, really?
Now, but someone said they were up there yesterday, and they had her in a wheelchair out in the hall. Mm-hmm. So they had gotten her up out of bed and had her in a wheelchair.
Well, they're discovering now that if it isn't an infarction, you know, where the blood clot is in the heart, that sometimes it's better to get these people up if they can breathe all right, because
they removed a polyp, which they said was going to be considerable size.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so terribly weak to have the operation in the first place, but they said she had to have it.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that makes her so depressed, I imagine, is the fact that when she gets well, she just won't ever be able to live and carry on the way she did with that eyesight. And she asked me if they were had begun work. She doesn't have a downstairs bathroom over here. And she can either make a bedroom downstairs, which she has a bedroom down now, but it's way up in the front part of the house. But she can make a very good bedroom in the back. And there's a place back there for where a bath could be added. So she's authorized them to do it. And she asked me the other day if they had started work on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't think they have. And she said, well, there's no hurry because I don't know when I'm going to get out of here. But that sounded hopeful.
Yes. Yeah.
Perhaps you could just tell her a little bit about our talk today at lunch and maybe mention that we'd like to talk to her. But I'd like to hear a little bit about it. Maybe she can start thinking about it a little. Give her something to think about.
I don't know.
Do you think?
I know my person's weak. The whole attitude.
Yeah, she'll have to be. And then she's in. She's in a room with 2 beds now.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in 40. She's in 617A. That means she's in the front in the first bed. I found out.
Yeah.
And you know, there's not much room there. I think the person in the B 417B. I think they're over there by the window, and there's more room over there. But anyway, she's She's in 617A. But when they move her to that nursing home, there'd probably be more room. And if she were able to be moved, she'd be stronger and better. I think that'd be a good time. But I don't believe the hospital would be a very good time unless you were in a private room.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many interruptions coming to one bed or another.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it'd be just something she could start thinking about.
Looking for
this little minister we had up here in Mekinoka, who was raised in a very religious home.
Yeah.
And everything was so pure there that even now at 28 years of age, I don't think he really knows what young people. He was never allowed to dance, and young people have been dancing in the church basements for the past 15
mm-hmm.
years. But he's just now discovering that they dance at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was from the Bible Belt, and he unfortunately condemned all of the pop music in the pulpit and alienated about 3 teenagers on that one go-round. They decided that's their medium right now. One of them, a certain age, you know, they talk through their music a lot, and to just denounce it all, just shot his wad with them, and they say, well, he won't understand anyway. Why talk to him about something else? And he would have to be with the times a little bit more, in addition to having had a little experience, say, with alcoholism. What would he know about the problems of living with an alcoholic?
Yeah.
You just don't say, Jesus is going to save me and get rid of the alcohol.
Yeah.
Or
that's right.
Problems with, he said, well, he didn't think, you know, you just went to church and that was expected of you and you didn't rebel at it or anything else. And what would he know about a rebellious child that refused to go to church, or how you would get them there? You can't take a teenager or near that, and pick them up and cart them to church and expect them to sit there and listen just because they're there.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And if you always had obedient, church-minded kids that were didn't know anything else.
Yeah.
That was their life.
Wow,
Billy Graham.
You
talking
now,
about
Now, that's a story such as you collect. I don't collect stories like that.
Well.
Yeah.
You know, Billy Graham had a rough life before he went to the ministry. He had a tangle with it first.
Yeah.
I think that it's just like Emerson said, you just got to taste a little of it. Got to live with it a little bit before you can tell it to anybody.
Yeah.
Maybe this is what they ought to do in seminary. Instead of putting them in a pile of books, maybe they ought to send them down to the Bowery and let them live with an alcoholic and let them see what a struggle it is for them. You never spend, and knowing where they are.
You know, Sunday school traditionally teaches people right and wrong. But I never hear you talk about right or wrong or Lois. You don't teach them morals, to be honest, or like that.
Are you asking me, do I teach that in my class?
Well, anybody. You don't teach that.
I do sometimes. Occasionally, I make it possible, or at least I've always tried to, if the young people had a problem on their mind, to go ahead and ask me no matter what.
Yeah.
And we're all friends down there, and they don't mind. And occasionally they do, and I have to, they'll say, well, how would you handle this? Because they know that if they were really truthful, they would perhaps be ostracized by their friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, it's just like a child on the phone. You listen to a parent on the phone, and it's so easy to say, well, I really am not sick. I'm not feeling well right now, so I can't go with you. And the child knows the mother's feeling perfectly fine, and they hear them. And they see that the mother just told a lie by any other name. And yet the mother will punish the child if the child tells a lie. And so you've got to be honest.
Been that, Lois.
She's Ocala.
Oh, oh.
Mm-hmm. She's Ocala Star Banner.
How long? Is that? How much is that for? How long a period of time?
For a week.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
I send them in every Wednesday, and they come out in Sunday's paper.
Uh-huh.
All the news is fit to print.
Yes.
All the news is fit to print.
Well, now how do you go about doing that?
Well, I keep my eyes open. I see a strange car somewhere. I go forward and says, have you got company from out of the state?
Oh.
I look around the church to see who's visiting. We spend the weekend. And then people call me like this, Miss Hatchett did just now.
Yeah.
How about that?
How do you write it up? Do you have any particular rules to go by? Just put on everything?
No, I studied journalism in school, but this is the most important part of the whole course. Was writing social news. Well, Mr. and Mrs. M.M. Richardson, who were accompanied by Mr. and Mrs. Dix Arnold of Lake Wahlberg, have returned from a most interesting motor trip to the historic Outer Bank, North Carolina. Of special interest in the area was the Elizabethan Gardens and the drama of the Lost Colony, which they viewed in Medio, North Carolina. That's a little sample.
Mm-hmm.
Is that interesting?
Well, you put in all the circumstances.
Huh? That's good. It has to be brief and to the point.
Yeah. Now, do they stick it in just as you write it?
Uh-huh.
Don't.
Well, sometimes they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Then I have suffered the consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got my name wrong. My initials wrong. That's not the way I spell my name. My blessed little name.
Yeah.
Everybody likes their name just right.
Just right, uh-huh.
Yeah. That's one thing people are usually pretty picky about, even a child. If you mispronounce his name,
mm-hmm.
they'll say, no, my name is so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the initials are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were talking about right and wrong, Lois. Do you still in your Sunday school class talk about right and wrong very much? Or do you just assume that everybody's right?
Yes, we talked about it last Sunday. about the three great men who in essence were less than them. Well, they're not perfect.
Yeah.
They double timed and they deceived and but yet God was able to use them.
Yeah.
Like the and we referred to that story in Jeremiah about the potter. He made a faulty vessel, but just started all over again with the same material, and made one that could be useful. And mm-hmm. So that's the way I think God does His people today, like the potter does. He makes we make mistakes and come up with a not a very desirable design, but we can be used again.
Mm-hmm. This was a little bit like I was trying to tell you about talking to the children. I try to give them, sounds like it's pretty much basic Bible Baptist, that you do have to tell the truth. Because all we're along the line, it's easy to depart from it. And if they kind of keep that in mind, just like Norma Vincent Peale says, and say, well, always try to tell the truth first, no matter how much. Well, you've got more to work with.
I don't think
you
prove
it.
You
see
what
I mean? I thought it was interesting, Lawrence. I just thinking you talk. You have so much more experience than I ever had.
I was going to look at things a little differently than we would. She's working with people your age, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm working with young people who are tangling with the mm-hmm. problems of right mm-hmm. and wrong all the time.
Yeah.
And I try one always to never criticize them when they, no matter how bad the thing is that they tell me. And some mm-hmm. of them have been pretty bad.
Oh, really?
Yes.
God.
And I try to help them.
I wouldn't want to know too much.
Give them a little insight into what they're doing. Don't criticize them. I just ask them a question back to get them to think about what they did,
mm-hmm.
but never say, well, that's right or that's wrong. And the only time I will ever say I think you were right or wrong is if they point blank say, was I right in doing that or was I wrong? Other than that, I never tell them. Because I just try to get them to think about it themselves. I don't think it's wrong to pass on.
Now, I could say, I bet you this would be interesting. I think Lois picked this up. See, people do step on her toes, and she is sensitive.
Extremely sensitive. She just doesn't show it to
you. Yes. Now, this is a little different, but it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think her sensitivity, most of the time, you just get the idea that she's just sort of light and gay.
Yeah.
But sometimes you see this other quiet, sensitive person that she is. In fact, there have been two times when I've seen this. Once, she just always seems to have this vigor and zest. And I said, Lois, it's just wonderful, you know, that you just never seem to tire and can go on like this. And she turned very thoughtful all of a sudden. She said, my mother said that to me. She said when she was ill, lying on the bed in there. And she said, Lois, I've always admired you because you always seem to be cheerful.
Now, this is a visit with Florence and Lois on Lois's big dining room table on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 6-9. This is the end of Channel 2, right? And I'll continue this on the other side. And this is the visit with Lois and Florence on Lois's big dining room table on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 1926-66. And this is the end of Channel 2, right? I'll continue it on Channel 2, over.